Admiral Gregory Quinn is on Relva 7 and has requested to be beamed aboard the Enterprise immediately. Wesley Crusher has a friend named Jake, and Mordok constructed the... checks notes. Mordok strategy. Hello, everybody, and welcome to The Seventh Rule with Sirach Lofton and Denise Crosby.
Hello.
My name is Ryan T. Husk. Today, we're doing a review of Star Trek The Next Generation, Season 1, Episode 18, Coming of Age, written by Sandy Fries, directed by Michael Vahar. This was March 12th, 1988. We've got a fantastic guest. We are absolutely thrilled to have John Putch joining us today. Hello, John.
Hello, everyone. Nice to be here.
We also have a very special thanks to give out to Grandpa One, aka Tim Baum, for sponsoring this entire season. Let's just get right into it. John, you played this guy.
Yes, thank you,
Mordok.
For having me. Yes.
And before we hit record, Denise asked you how long that makeup took, which is probably the question you'll get for the rest of your life. What's the answer to it?
Well, it had to be at least 4.5 to 5 hours, because they called me at, figure if your call time's 3:30 and you get in the chair, then my set call was 7 a.m. So what's that? 3.5, almost 4 hours. So, and sometimes it'd be later because, you know, they delay or move something or something. And yeah, I was asleep in the chair. So it was a really long process. But it was a very lucrative guest spot, because they'd have to force you to come in inside of 12 hours pretty much every day that I worked. So it turned out to be a nice, you know, extra cheese for coming in so early, thanks to Screen Actors Guild and their rules. So, but yeah, I fell asleep in the chair. Huh?
How long did it take to take off?
Oh, well, not as long, but I had never done an appliance a character before, so I didn't realize that they needed to take it off for you. And no one told me that until the AD or the PA said, yep, you got to go back to makeup. I go, but I'm done. He goes, no. They need the stuff. And I just assumed I was to rip it off and go home and clean up like you do in the theater. And it took half an hour to get it off. And it was rough. They'd be painting that stuff on your head, that acetone and stuff. And it was bad for the skin back then.
People don't realize that, they're only focused on the, application, but man, you gotta painstakingly get that removed. And at the end of the day, all you do want to do is get home and just rip it off, but you gotta sit there a whole second level process.
Lunchtime was always unique for me, because when everyone would go to lunch, it's a walk away on the Paramount lot. So they give you an hour, and you'd walk to the commissary, and me being a Star Trek fan prior to the show, you were in the commissary and you'd see Star Trek, Starfleet characters walking around with their trays. And it was like I took note of it and was just so amazed by it. And I would, of course, tell my wife everything when I got home. Guess who I saw in commissary today? I saw a Vulcan, and I saw a transporter guy. I saw some gold. I saw some red. I had the whole thing. And then there I was in the blue thing. And I clearly was the anomaly, because everyone was staring at me. And I felt like a monster, and I couldn't eat when I got there. Everything would break off if I ate. So I had to do soups, and I had to, they brought me sippy things during the day, and it was hard. I was tired and hungry at the end of every day, but, fun nevertheless. I don't think I could get through that today at this
But it was worth it, at least for those of us who watched it, maybe not for you. But as Denise mentioned, she said before we recorded that this was the best makeup she's seen so far. The Emmy Awards tend to agree, because this episode was nominated for Outstanding Makeup in a Television Series. And this specific thing nominated, that was, of course, Michael Westmore. Great accolades there, and it was, noticed, which is not something that happens very often with Star Trek.
Well, it was nominated, but it didn't win, correct?
Yeah.
I mean, what could possibly beat out this?
My guess is something non-sci-fi. They hate sci-fi. They're so
And also remember, you're season one and you're just becoming a super hit, and you know how they are. And then, but he got his Emmys later. I mean, there were Emmys delivered later in year, were there not? I'm pretty sure there were.
Yeah, I don't know, actually.
Yeah,
I
no, mean, there were.
Yeah,
there
were. Yeah, he's got plenty of Emmys.
Yeah, he's got a ton of
Emmys. All right.
Are we allowed to swear on this show or not? I mean, I'll keep it.
We can use the word 57, as in 57 Emmys. That Next Generation was nominated for. We'll check on how many they actually won, but that's
wow.
Oh, it won 19.
There you go.
So that's exactly 1/3, if my math is correct. Yeah,
119 Emmys.
Yeah, I mean they were all
in makeup and all in makeup.
No, different.
That's
no
everything. Acting.
Different categories. Yeah.
Any acting Emmys?
Well,
they don't.
I'll tell you who didn't win
an Emmy. Expectantly.
They don't give acting Emmys to sci-fi.
Nope. No,
No, they don't.
Which is terrible because, you know, it is acting. I don't know why they don't qualify it. It just, if there's a good story, it should just get nominated.
Yeah, to this day, it's that's the case, isn't it?
It's kind of a discriminatory thing. It's a discrimination against science fiction.
Yeah,
it actually, you joke, but we've always felt that way, honestly.
Yeah.
But John, you kind of touched on this a little bit earlier. You mentioned you are a Star Trek fan. Mm-hmm. Do you remember when you first laid eyes upon Star Trek and dreamt that someday you'll be a monster at the commissary in the name of Star Trek?
No, never. And, you know, I loved the original show and as a youngster. And, you know, it was when this thing came about, when they announced they were doing this, I mean, the Star Trek fans were all a flutter because we had the movie at that point. I think we had a couple of the movies at that point. And now there was the new show. We were just dying. And luckily, I knew Junie Lowry Johnson from years ago, who is a very loyal casting director and brings in all of us on most of this, you know, whenever she can. And I read for the pilot, I read for one of the characters on the first show. I don't even remember, but she brought me in on everything. And I came in over the years on the first season on this show. And, you know, this one hit. So I got in that way. But I never dreamt I'd be on the show, but when we all heard it was coming, you know, as we all do, our little actors in the town, we're all excited about it and trying to get in on it and hoping it goes. And, but yeah, no, I did pretty good in the '80s when I was an actor. Of course, I'm a director now, but the '80s were kind of good. I was the right age. I was slim. I had hair, you know, I had all that. I didn't, you know, I was charactery, but not, you know, so I remember doing well in the '80s, and then it all just fell apart in the mid-90s. And that's when I started veering off to do everything.
Smart.
When you first come on the screen, you have this kind of harmonica looking contraption. What right. Do you remember? It looked like
we must discuss this item. I've discussed it before, and it was a marvelous little gadget that they created for this character, who was from a water planet, meaning that's why I have gills. If you look behind Ryan, they put gills back where my ears are, and these tendrils. It was a very, you know, fish-like character. That's what they told me. And so they needed something here which would lead the viewer to believe that this is what I used to breathe, oxygen, when I really need to be, you know, gilling or something. So they had this little
license to gill.
Yeah, this thing that clipped on to my. I had a, you know, I had the girdle on under the tunic, and they clipped this thing in, and it held there. It had a battery in it. And they had little LEDs, which was amazing back then, because how do you get those, you know? And and they dropped little ice crystals. Alan, what was the prop man's name? Alan.
Oh,
he was so nice. Sweet Alan. Anyway,
yeah.
he he'd come over and drop little ice crystals in that were dry ice every, like literally every shot. And I would have to hold my head a certain way. So you couldn't see over the edge. So the camera couldn't see over the edge to see the little ice crystals. So, and then they to add even more difficulty to doing everything, I had to like try to puff into it to disperse, you know, clouds because they didn't have, you know, smoke VFX or they couldn't track it at the time, you know, all this stuff that you can do now. So I had to like stand there at a certain level like this most of the time. And then I could only cock my head this way and that, because if I ever did this, they go, no, camera operator would say, no, can't do that. I can see the ice. And I go, okay. And can you try to puff into that as you're saying this line? Oh, and I go, no, I said, I'm talking. So if I talk and try to puff, I'd have to puff with my nose. I said, I can do it in between. I can do it, you know, right before I talk, right after I talk. And that's what I tried to do.
Plus it changes your performance. But
that's right.
The property master, the prop master was Alan Sims. Just looked
him up. Alan Sims. Like a nice guy. I love that guy. Sweet guy. Thank you for looking that up.
Wow. Well, you made it work. I mean, you totally sold it.
I'm good with the props. I mean, that was one thing I was hiding behind the mask, but I could, you know, as an actor, I knew how to hit the tape mark and I knew how to cock my head and I knew how to play with the props. I was good at that, you know.
It all worked. God.
Yeah, it was pretty fun. Fantastic. And, you know, everybody was nice on that show. I mean, I knew you probably talked about this ad nauseum, but like everybody in that cast, like I didn't get the sense that even though Rick Berman, who, you know, we all know was the biggest ego on the lot. I didn't sense that people were being, weren't being mistreated. Everyone felt like a group, an ensemble. I saw you guys backing each other up, you know, in scenes, and I saw everybody participating because you all felt like, you know, you were all the crew of the Enterprise. So, you know, I appreciated that and saw it. I don't know if that was the case, Denise, but that's how it looked.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, everybody, you know, we were in the trenches, you know, that first season. We had to really like watch each other's backs, you know.
Yeah.
It was wild. We weren't sure what was going on behind the scenes. We weren't always privy to things. We felt there was some tension in the writer's room and they kind of powers that be. I mean, suits were coming down from Paramount to, you know, keep an eye on us. And so we were, they tried to keep us in the dark a lot about stuff.
I'm sure.
And, you know, we that was fun. We just kept each other going. And, you know, the hours were brutal. I mean, those days were really long. And, it was tough shooting that show. It was not easy.
But John, before we began recording, you said something that I want to double back on. And it was a really great compliment. But I just wanted for clarification, because something I hadn't heard before. And you said outside of Patrick Stewart, the biggest, you know, star on the show was who?
Denise. It was true. She's the one when the cast came out and you saw who was in it. Denise is who everyone know who it was. I mean, we all kind of knew Patrick because, you know, everyone knows the Brits. We love the Brits. But, she was our name, really, to us actors. So. I'm not kidding. That's the way it was. And at where I was, and I'm, you know, I was in there. I was in that game back then. I was I made a good living in the '80s going from show to show. I mean, it was a time when you could do that. Not even close to being able to be the case these days. Maybe in the last 20 years, you can't even do it. So.
Well, you certainly made a pretty big name for yourself. I mean, looking up all your credentials in the past, You've done quite a bit. You've done quite a bit in directing currently as well. Before we get into directing, though, I disappeared for a quick second because I just remembered something from my childhood. And that thing I remembered was this.
I was going to say, sir.
You are an action figure. Who's going to bring
that out? Okay. Oh, wow.
How? Wow. So, I mean, that's got to be so cool to have your very own action figure. Yeah. Denise does as well. So does Ciroc. But that is an iconic character if you've got your own own action figure.
And that is indeed the Mordok guy because that's the outfit. That's the tunic.
Exactly.
They didn't. Yeah. I guess they didn't put the Mendon out. But look how giant that thing is. The breathing device. Look how giant it is.
Yeah,
they couldn't make it small enough. They couldn't get a mold small enough. But yeah, you know, I have one of those signed by Michael Westmore. I have it in a box. And you know, as Denise will attest, we got nothing from that action figure.
Pride.
Let me ask you about that action figure specifically. How long after your appearance did the action figure materialize?
I think it pretty soon because they were full into merchandising. I believe it must have been the following year, if not that, you know, soon after. It was definitely after it aired. And, you know, everyone, I know what, because when I went back season two to do that other one, Michael Westmore pulled it off the shelf and said, "You see this? You're an action figure." And then that's how I knew about it. So it must have happened between the two. And, you know, I used to see them on eBay and, you know, cause I'm stealth. No one knows it's me because look at the makeup. You can't tell. Yeah. So I can gaslight.
We could tell it was you in a second.
I gaslight people online all the time with on eBay, especially that are selling those. And, you know, I usually say, "Hey, how come you don't have the one that's signed by Michael Westmore?" You know, and they go, "What? There's one that's signed." But you go, "Yeah." So, wow.
Well, let's
be
talk.
Careful. People will be getting those signed at the convention. They'll be standing in line.
Yeah.
"Mr. Westmore, can you sign my Mordok, please?"
Oh, that's true.
I'm pretty sure there'll be one.
Listen,
you tell him, I won't sign Mordok. I'll only sign Mendon.
Mendon, yeah. you know, as an actor, when you've worked as many years as we have, you can track what are the most aired shows you've ever done. I don't know if you ever do that, you guys. This show, I get more fan mail from these two appearances on this show than anything I've ever done. The other one, second, is Jaws 3D, because I was in that. And then a distant third is Seinfeld. I did one episode of Seinfeld.
Oh, which
and I
one?
Had like three lines with Jerry, and it's on all the time. There's always $2 coming residual or something. But this show, the power of this franchise, forget about it. I mean, people send me full-on glossies to sign and cards and, you know, the little trading cards and the, you know, those action figures. It's wild, and I'm happy to sign them and send them off, you know. Mm-hmm. But it's crazy how just huge it is. And I'm so lucky to be a part of it because I got to do two of yours, and then I got to be in the Generations movie. I have stories about Shatner on that one. And then years later, I get to work with Bob Picardo. He's been in several of my movies as a director, and I directed him in a play. And then I just finally got to work with Johnny Frakes this year in this Hallmark thing I did. I have Picardo and Frakes in the same
movie. In the same thing.
Yeah, and we had a love fest. It's called A Biltmore Christmas, and it'll be out in
Hallmark.
Excuse me, hello.
I know you've done time. You've done like a million of them, right?
No, I've never done a Hallmark thing.
Oh well, we need to. I need to suggest you. You know,
and it's got to be Christmas because
it's always Christmas.
It's got to be a Christmas movie.
Oh because, yeah,
you know, I can. I got some street
cred. Yeah. I can see in a nice love story, a nice homework love story.
Yeah, there was one I almost did once where it was kind of cool because it was pretty progressive. It was, you know, I was the mother of a guy who's gay, and it was the first time Hallmark was doing like a Christmas gay story. But yeah. I don't know what happened. It sort
yeah,
of
that was up. A big deal. That was in the yeah. last couple of years, wasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, mm. yeah, yeah.
All right. Yeah. So you've been down there.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah. I'd love to work with you. That would be so much fun.
It would be fun.
The trekking. Yeah.
I know. It's like it's. I'm connected in ways of six degreeing. You know.
Yeah.
So I'm very glad about that. I'm very happy about to be included and be part of the history books. It's fun because, you know.
John, you mentioned your transition from being an actor to a director, which you are currently. And my question is, and this may be a question you haven't gotten before, but would you hire yourself, Ooh. The actor version of yourself, for a project that you've directed? And if so, which project would that have been?
Well, yes, I would, because I appreciate the kind of actor I was. Show okay. up on time, know my lines, don't yeah. piss anybody off, work as yeah. an ensemble, not a star, and yep. and you know, hit my mark. I mean, that's a director's dream. And when I get actors like that on my set as a director, I'm literally like, oh my God, thank you, Lord. Somebody has sent a good human being actor to me that's not in this for some other reason. Anyway, yes, mm-hmm. I would hire myself. What project? No idea, because I don't. I'm not particularly fond of looking at myself on camera. So that's why, because I deleted my picture here. I'm only seeing you three. So just I'll give you an idea.
Really? Yeah. Well, here you are too.
Yeah, well, that I can take because I, you know.
Yeah. Now, John, we'll only have you for another minute or so, but you did sneak quickly by saying that you have many stories about William Shatner.
Oh, it's a whole episode.
Well, you were it's on the episode. Movie Generations, right? You were one of the reporters yeah. on yeah. the bridge, which is yeah. such a fun scene. Everybody remembers that scene as the Tuesday scene. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, you know, I'll give you the cliff note. It was me and Tommy Hinckley, another actor.
Oh,
who we were pals and we got cast. Junie Lowry Johnson, sorry. Junie Lowry Johnson said to the producers of the movie, hey, let's get everybody we loved from Next Generation's guest stars and see if they'll, you know, we can put them, populate these little, you know, parts. And that was the pitch when they called to ask, would you ever do 2 days, you know, as a reporter, or would you ever, you know, they were very nice about, you know, giving us making us feel good about ourselves. But, and because of that, I got in there and Tommy got in there and I knew Gwen Van Damme got in there. And there are other people who had been in the show that apparently they liked over the years. Anyway, so that's how I
that's
got
so
in there.
Fun.
So the best part is, though, it's I'm the guy with the camera on my head. And Tommy is the audio guy. He's got the microphone. So I have the stupid appliance again on my head. And the pictures are hysterical. And so I'm on the bridge when they parade Kirk and Scotty and Chekhov. Walter Kane and Chekhov around. And I got a couple of days with those guys. It might have been a whole week. And I loved those two guys. And Shatner, you know, was Shatner. And but those two guys were great. I talked about, you know, I sat around. They sat in the chairs with us. They were really cool. And they were not happy with Shatner because his book had just come out, you know, his Tool book, basically, where his ego and he himself just alienated even more people. So
everybody, please welcome William Shatner is here.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But anyway, he was pretty funny and pompous, and I got to interact with him. And he thought I was an extra, and he never looked me in the eye. And he literally, I had dialogue with him, and he didn't. He kept looking at David Carson, the director, and saying, "Is there any way we could possibly, you know?" And I'm going, "Bill, I'm here. I'm right here. Tell me what you want me to do."
Wow.
And so there was a bit of that. And
can you ask him to move a little bit to the left, please?
Yeah, I should have. I should have, but he threw me into a light. You know, he pushes me away. Get out of my face with that thing. You know, he pushes me into a light, and I knocked over a light because he pushed me off this thing. You know, he didn't let me work. And so I walked up to him. I said, look, we've done stage combat. Don't push me. I just knocked the light over. I literally saying to him, I go, just, you know, give me the shove. I'll do the work. This is how we do it. And he literally looked at David Carson and said, I think we should do it again. And I won't push so hard this time. So it was hilarious. It was a hilarious 4 days. And there's more. Wow. There's so much more, but I can't, you know, I know you don't want to talk about it. But anyway, because this is the Not That Show. But fun. And every day I'd go home and I'd go, honey, guess what happened today? And I'd tell her the whole, because it's Captain Kirk, you know?
Yeah.
Watching his childhood. And there he was. He was a really fun experience. So anyway, I got to do that, and then I think that was the end of it. Really. I didn't work on your show, Ciroc, and I didn't work on Voyager. I knew people. I knew, you know, we all knew each other then. You know,
yeah.
Well, auditions.
You mentioned Junie, and Junie hired me for my role, and I love her dearly for that. Yeah. I'll never be able to thank her for that. Repay her.
Yeah,
but
no, she was great to us.
And David Carson directed our pilot episode, if I'm not mistaken. So
he definitely did. Yeah, that sweet guy.
Yeah, sweet guy. Really, and, I liked him a lot. I thought a terrific director too.
And I had that movie was John Alonzo was the DP, Alonzo, and he had you know. And what's weird is there was one camera even on this feature. Nowadays, we're used to two or three cameras.
Yeah, one camera.
I can't imagine shooting one camera as a director. But he had his credits on a plaque on the Panavision, on the big camera. So, like, there would be literally one, you know, those plastic plates with the white perfect lettering engraving on it. And it would have all of his movies. You know, and he had his little hat on and everything. And I loved him because he would be standing around in the middle of a set like this and people are setting up and time would go by and we're sitting there waiting to start. And he literally would shout at the top of his lungs, are we going to shoot this or admire it? And I never forgot that. And I say it to this day when I'm waiting on something on set and because I want to go fast as a director. And I'm standing around. I'll say that once in a while. No one knows what they think of. Who's the asshole?
Do you use that voice though when you do it though?
Sometimes, because no one knows what I'm doing, or they may think I'm kidding. I really
I thought it was Sean Connery. That sounded a lot like Sean to me.
No, this was John Alonzo. Whoa! Did I put the accent in?
Sorry.
Sean Connery in there. Well, you know what Sean Connery said when the book fell on his head, right? I blame myself. So,
oh god.
Anyway, the point is, Denise, this has been so much fun.
My heart, be still my heart.
We really appreciate you joining us. You absolutely are the guest by far that looks the most like a football coach that we've ever had, and I love every minute of it. And I am an NFL fan.
And I am an NFL fan. Thank you. Now, I know you don't have repeats, but if you need me for Matter of Honor, just let me know. I can continue the story.
We would love that.
We'd love to hear the
Mendon
rest of the story.
Because there are a lot of questions that we're going to have about Mendon.
Yeah.
But we, you know, shouldn't ask him now. So we'd love to have you. Thank you so much.
I got more trivia. We didn't touch on any of that. You're very good with your timing. Thank you. I would stay longer, but I understand. Yeah, no, I like all right. Well, look, it was a pleasure to know you.
Pleasure to meet you, John.
So you good awesome. To see you again. Been way,
bye, Denise.
Way too yeah. long.
I know. Well, long. Thanks again.
John, before you go, everybody at home, check out the Hallmark movie. What was it called again?
It's called A Biltmore Christmas.
And the one with Denise Crosby will be the following year, everybody.
Let us hope.
So everybody stick around. We will be right back. Thank you so much to John. This has been amazing. Really appreciate you and your time. We'll be right back, everybody, on The Seventh Rule. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to The Seventh Rule with Denise Crosby and Ciroc Lofton. That smile we have is from John Putch. He was so much fun. Even after he left, we were like, oh my God, he was so much fun. But anyway, we love him. We hope to have him back again sometime. It would be amazing. Very quickly, here are the trivioids of the week. Wesley Crusher has a friend named Jake. It was just so cool to hear him say Jake. Admiral Gregory Quinn is on Relva 7 and has requested to be beamed aboard the Enterprise immediately. Wesley Crusher will be 16 next month. Mordok constructed the Mordok strategy. Only fools have no fear. Admiral Quinn wants to promote Picard to Admiral to take over as Commandant of Starfleet Academy. There's something wrong in the environmental lab, and Picard decides he's going for a walk. So this was a lot of fun, this episode. It was kind of a Wesley Crusher episode that kind of befit a Wesley Crusher episode. It seems like they're maybe ironing that out a little bit more. What do you guys think?
Yeah, it was nice to see Wesley with, you know, kids, with his own age, his peers. Again, we're seeing how that really benefits, the show really, really blossoms for him when that happens. And it whenever, this is now like, I think the second or third episode we've seen where he's, you know, with his peers, and just how appropriate it feels, and such a nice addition. And he was just delightful in this episode. And I really liked this episode. I didn't remember it as usual. God, our audience is going to say, you know, I really think she needs to see someone.
Well, I challenge anybody to remember something 36 years ago. Come on.
Just, you know, I mean, really, I can't. But it was just really, it was just a fun, engaging episode. And they blended the two A and B stories, were a little more, you know, symbiotic in this way than they sometimes are. Mordok.
Yeah.
Mordok.
Yeah, I thought this episode could have been called The Test, because it felt like both Picard was getting put through a test, the ship was being tested, and Wesley's being tested. So like, I felt like everybody was being tested. The first about 10 to 12 minutes, I was a little slow on. So it took me a while to get into the story. It just didn't unfold fast enough for me. But once I got into it and it started rolling at past the 12-minute mark, I felt that I liked the story more and more. Because the Commander Remick, who was going around being, you know, his own Captain Shaw
in his own mind.
In his own mind, he was Captain Shaw and just getting under people's skin and just, you know, I thought he really was good. Cause there was a moment where I was questioning his motives. I didn't know if there was something else going on. It was hard. He was getting under people's skin really well. I like the fact that the crew were sticking together. I like that they were like, no, we're not, there's nothing to see here, and we're not going to talk about anything that we have going on personally, that we've, you know, personal discussions. For example, when Dr. Crusher came in and said, you know, how I feel, my opinion of the captain is none of your business, or something to that effect.
Yeah, she did.
Yeah, so I thought that was good. I also liked the way everybody was, you know, even Data, you know, stood up, and he was like, there's nothing, you know, there's nothing there. There's nothing wrong.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, he did have one quick line. He said, when Remick, Data says, there's nothing wrong with Captain Picard. And Remick says, that is not acceptable. And Data says, acceptable or not, sir, it is the truth. And we're all like, whoops, checkmate.
Yeah. And I like that everybody was sticking up for their captain and for their ship. And to me, that's what this episode really brought out the most. And the other thing that I really enjoyed was the scene between Worf and Wesley. It felt like I got the most mm-hmm. of, like, we don't really get much Worf so far. Mm-hmm. And I really got a window into Worf's kind of thinking. I thought him having the interaction with Wesley and being concerned about him was also another good sign of, you know, fellow, you know, human being concerned about another one. And also Worf opening up and giving him some personal, like,
yeah,
advice about his own insecurities. I thought, whoa, that's pretty mature.
I was wondering if maybe they were thinking, let's plant the seeds of this unlikely friendship, of a Wesley and Worf friendship. And then I thought about it, and I don't remember anything ever coming from that in subsequent episodes, but I wonder, because it felt like they were trying to create a little thing there, and it seemed like it would have been a really fun and interesting storyline to follow for years to come.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I think Worf gave a great line. He said, thinking about what you can't control only wastes energy and creates its own enemy. It was a great mm-hmm. Kind of a, you know, like a fatherly or big brotherly advice to give to Wesley. And then he went on to say, you know, only fools have no fear. Another mm-hmm. kind of just insight into Worf, who has this very tough exterior, but admitting that, you know, there is something that he's fearful of. And that's kind of moment of bonding, I think, is essential to character building when you're doing these kinds of shows. It makes us believe that everybody cares about each other and that they spend so much time together in the same place. So you know that if you spend time with somebody in a long enough, you know, in a closed environment, you just friendships and relationships are going to begin to form, and it's just only natural. So I love that kind of seeing those things unfold.
And it's smart, you know, writing. It's deep thinking, you know, that went into this, and you get a sense of the depth of these people, that they're not just without conscience and thought and depth. Reading, like they spent time in with philosophers and structuring, you know, these philosophies that start to come through. It's not just reacting to, you know, crises and things like that, but they actually have, you know, philosophical points of view that come out.
Yeah,
and that's nice to see.
You know,
and the other. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, please. I was going to change the subject onto something else.
Me too, to some degree, but the topic I was going to bring up is that this episode actually was referring to other episodes. So
that's
when,
what I was, that's
oh,
what
were
I was
you about
to say?
Say
I was like,
thing?
At a certain point, it started to feel like, to me, like a writer's strike episode, like a clip show. I was like, wait a minute, was there a writer's strike going on in early?
Yeah, but I thought it was unusual for 18 episodes in for a guy like Commander Remick to be able to go through and ask about previous episodes and say, well, what about the Ferengi thing that happened? What about the that time? When you guys ran into that. Yes, exactly. When, you know, the guy took the ship to the end of space or whatever it was, that episode. So they were referring to their own episodes. Another kind of weird thing to do so early on in the show, right? It's the first season. You're just getting your legs under you, right, as a show. And here you are 2/3 of the way through and you're like already doing a flashback or referencing 3 or 4 different episodes that have already occurred.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that's kind of unusual. Just felt like unusual to me. Not that it's never been done before. I don't know. I just don't recall it that much, watching shows.
Mm-hmm.
But I give him credit for consistency and keeping the audience reminded about the things that we've seen already. So that was a good thing for them. Mm-hmm. But I also want to say that Captain Picard, gives really good deliveries at certain moments that I really think he's exceptional at. And mm-hmm. some of those moments are when he's stern. And I like when Patrick is stern, giving direct, saying directly how he feels. He's nuts. You know, he's a little bit different with the playful stuff, but with the stern, straight ahead stuff, he's pretty solid. And my moment is when he was talking to the Commander Remick on the bridge of the ship, who was in there interfering with them as they were going through this very critical moment with the kid Jake who took the runabout. And as they were going through that thing, Commander Remick runs in and says, "Hey, you know, you got to do this or whatever. It's very dangerous." And Captain Picard says, "Either get out of my way and keep quiet, or I'll have you removed from the bridge." And it was a very, you know, it was no nonsense. Mm. And I really like it when Patrick Stewart goes no nonsense. I like it when Avery Brooks goes no nonsense. I think there's just a moment, to me, that's what a captain is. It's the guy who's willing to and not afraid to say things that might hurt your feelings, but it has to be said, and to in order to remain or you know reclaim order. And mm-hmm. that's, to me, those are the moments. Those are the captain moments. I want to see the captain say, "No, this is how it's going to be. I'm drawing a line here," and you know, and setting a tone. And I thought that Picard did a very good job of setting that tone in that moment. Like, you know, you might have your job to do, but this is my ship. I got a job mm-hmm. to do, and you're interfering. And so, you know, there's no middle ground here.
When you said that, Sirach, I was picturing Denise as a captain. I was like, oh man, she could nail that role like that yeah. too. I can yeah. just see it.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, you know, and he never loses command, you know, of this. He really sets that. And I remember acting with him on the show. There was always that. He brought that personally to the set. You know, there was a gravitas. There was a seriousness. There was a preparedness. You know, you never thought Patrick was going to show up not knowing his lines and not giving, you know, nor did any that happen with anyone, but you got the sense that, you know, this man is like, we've got to fall in line alongside acting with him, you know? So it was never, you never had to do this like leap of faith to believe he was your captain. He just brings that personally, yeah. you know?
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, that's what I'm talking for about. Our home run of the episode today. Denise, you're already smiling. I hope that means you've got one already.
You know, I go back and forth with this one. I mean, between Wesley and Picard, you know, for me in this one, I thought Will had an exceptional episode in yeah. that he really had to have a lot of different places he had to go to in this episode. I think I got to give him a tie because I just think Patrick too was superb in this particular episode where he really you feel him struggling with the position he finds himself in that is so is so uncomfortable for him to be kind of not brought, you know, not in on the assignment here. It's his ship. It's his power. It's his, you know, he knows it better than anyone. He's one of the great captains, and yet he's not being allowed in on this. And he just does such a magnificent job, I think, in this particular episode. So I'm going to give him a tie.
Yeah. I'm going to give first my honorary mention to Jonathan Frakes, who does some of the best pouting I've ever seen as an actor. When he throws his temper tantrum, he just, I don't want to be here. And he just does this thing. And it's funny because he did that when, Troy's husband popped out of nowhere, or arranged marriage husband guy. And he went on his whole, like, I'm done, just really upset and you've just pissed me off. So I love when he does his temper tantrum. I think Jonathan Frakes is hilarious at the temper tantrum. I love it. But my home run is actually going to go to John Putch. Mm-hmm. Is that how you pronounce his last name? Putch. Yep. I liked what he did with the character. I guess some of it can go to the writing, but I want to also say the delivery. And the moment that I'm giving it to him for was, I think it's something very admirable when somebody forfeits their own reward, or, he was being praised for being exceptional at what he does. And instead of accepting that praise and saying, yes, right, I'm the best, he actually took that opportunity to say, no, Wesley, I wouldn't have done it without Wesley. He took time out. He helped me. And he was basically saying, Wesley's better than me. And I actually thought that is a quality in itself, which makes him worthy of being chosen, because it's a level of honesty that requires you to take yourself down a notch. Mm-hmm. And he could have easily have just accepted the praise and been put on the pedestal, but he actually had to reflect and be honest with himself and pass the proper due acknowledgement to what Wesley did. And I thought that is what made him worthy of being the first Benzite in Starfleet, that quality. Mm-hmm.
Well, I've got so much to add to all this, but I'm going to try to trim it very, as well as Wesley Crusher's hair got trimmed. I feel like Wesley Crusher's barber gets an honorable mention. I feel like Riker doing his straddling over the seat gets honorable mention. Thinks he's on a horse or something. Wesley Crusher himself, it's nice to see him doing things that befit the character, I think, a little bit better, and he did very well with that. But John Putch, to me, for introducing one of my favorite aliens, which are the Benzites. I love the Benzites, even though we don't get to see much of them. And I think somebody might look to possibly overact in a case like that, because you're an alien, this character actor, territory covered from head to toe, but the script didn't really call for the need to overact, And so I think he did a great job of playing it just ever so slightly, a little bit different, a little bit alien, without trying too hard to create something, zany. So definitely home run of the day for him, but also honorable mention to Picard's side eye when Remick said, I get off in 6 months. I'd love to be part of the Enterprise. And Picard's like, are you? Yeah, that was the most British side eye I've ever seen. I was like, woo.
Oh, yeah.
If looks to kill, that guy would have a sprained finger right now.
I know. This may be the first time, too, we're really seeing the Picard maneuver, pulling down of the.
Oh, yeah.
Doing it quite a bit in this.
Very nice. Yeah. Picard maneuver, the Riker maneuver, the when he straddles. Mm-hmm. So very quickly, let's give a very special thanks to our friends, Homer Frizzell, Dr. Anne-Marie Siegel, Eve England out in Wales, Yvette Blackman, Tom, TJ Jackson Bay out in Missouri, Bill Victor Arukin, Titus Muller, the Kings fan, Darlena Marie, Dr. Muhammad Noor, Tierney C. Deekman, Anna Post, Anil O. Palat, Joe Balsarati, Mike Gu, DQ, Neil Akasaka. Our good friend Justine Norton Kurtzen, Dr. Stephanie Baker, Carrie Schwent, Faith Howell, Edward Foltz, my live from Tokyo, the Matt Boardman, Chris McGee, Justin Weir, Jake Barrett, Jane Jorgensen, Henry Unger, Allison Leach Hyde, Jed Thompson, Steve Case. Is that Joe Bugbuster? Yep. And of course, Dr. Susan V. Gruner and Jason Oaken. Thank you very much, everybody. Stick around. We've got the free for all up next. It's going to be fun as heck. Watch your mouth. We'll be right back on the seventh rule. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the seventh rule. This is the free for all. Of course, we've got Allison Leach Hyde joining us. Faith Howell is here, as is Jason Oaken. We've got Dr. Muhammad Noor here, and Eve England is not here. She's out in Wales, but she's present. Steve Case is also here. Mai is live in New York. Carrie Schwent is live in Chicago. And Chris McGee is going to swallow our souls tonight. The Dark Lord. Homer Frizzell is also here wearing a radical self-sealing stem bolt seventh rule shirt that you could get at our Teespring store in the comments below. Sorry, in the description box below. Siroc's wearing his incognito too. Don't think I didn't notice. Gorgeous. All right.
Yeah.
So.
Hey, don't forget Muhammad Noor.
Did I forget Dr. Muhammad?
No, you got me. You got me. It's all good. But thank you, Siroc. I appreciate you looking out for me.
Making sure.
Double mention.
The man so nice, we named him twice. All right. So let's see. Did we have any non-appearance mentions today? Yes. We have one by my count. And his name is Jack Crusher. They mentioned Beverly Crusher's husband. Also, one huge thing we didn't mention earlier, when Wesley Crusher ran into Rondon, I am Rondon, you despicable melanoid slime worm. Does anybody know why that is important?
Yes.
That is what Murph is in Star Trek Prodigy, right? He is a melanoid slime worm. Something that was mentioned only once in Star Trek history before Prodigy, oh, wow. And it was that one very line. That's why nobody could guess it before when we were trying to figure out what Murph is. So Jake Sisko guesses the IMDb score.
I'm going to go with a 7. Solid 7.
All right. Anybody else have any guesses that doesn't already know?
6.2.
Seven sounds good. I think it's
closer to an 8. Ooh. I really like this episode.
7.3.
These are excellent guesses. All right. The answer is 7.1.
Oh, go Siroc.
Wow.
This guy, Siroc, he's too good at this.
He's on it.
All right. So let's talk about this fun episode. Eve England sipping in her futuristic mug. Can you please start us off? Actually, I remember those mugs kind of started in like the 80s for like travel mugs or something, right?
Okay, they don't spill, so they're quite handy.
What'd you think of this one?
Yeah, I like this one. I didn't kind of feel myself rolling my eyes really very much at all, which is really positive for me. So yeah, no, I actually really enjoyed it. And I like the Wesley story particularly. I thought it was really nice to see more from Wesley and to see him with other characters his own age. And I thought that came across really well. But I did like the fact at the end that the Admiral had this big conspiracy theory. So I was kind of, I want to hear more about that. So I'm hoping that we might get more of this in the future, but I'm assuming that maybe we don't. And that was just kind of a plot device for this episode. But I was quite intrigued by what potential sort of infiltration they might have had at the top of the Federation and Starfleet. So yeah, I was kind of intrigued by that. So I was a bit disappointed that there wasn't more of that. So I'm fingers crossed I get more, but I'm not 100% convinced I'm going to get that.
What's funny about that is Denise, Siroc, and Eve here are the only ones that haven't seen these episodes before. So we didn't talk about this earlier, but when you said, I'd forgotten about that they mentioned this conspiracy thing, and they just didn't touch it at all after that. So I'm sure everybody else here has no idea if the conspiracy plot line will continue on towards the end of this season or any other. Dr. Muhammad Noor, your thoughts on this episode?
They're a little spoilery, but I'd say I like both plots. I was excited to see the introduction of both Remick and Admiral Quinn, just because they're characters that we may get to know a little bit more later on. So that was interesting. I actually thought Remick had some interesting depth and complexity to him. So even if he was annoying to the crew, I actually found him an interesting character nonetheless. On the Starfleet exam front, I like that plot okay. I wish there was a little bit more depth to Olyana Mirren. I mean, not just like, you know, a little bit of a stereotype of insecure and commenting Wesley's cute, like, okay. But the plot was interesting and the performances were compelling. So overall, I was pretty positive. Actually, I concur with Evan that this was one of the better episodes, relatively speaking, across the season, and, you know, and quite good.
Mm-hmm. Jason Oaken, what do you think? Quite good or nah?
It's one of the more, I'd say, unique episodes of the first season so far. To some degree, it's focused more on character, I think, than some of the others were. Certainly the Wesley story, you know, you can argue with the execution and the detail whether something should have been a little bit more in depth. But at least, you know, they tried to go after sort of the character story more than the plot itself. I mean, you know, the plot piece is, you know, is the conspiracy piece. And to me, it's all, you know, this episode has always been sort of a companion to something else, which we don't want to spoil. That's how I tend to see the show specifically. But, you know, the Wesley story, just to see, first of all, to see him, you know, basically fail at something, even though, mm-hmm. you know, he tried hard enough and failed. And I think it's maybe, you know, certainly the first time we see him fail.
Exactly.
Not the last time, but certainly the first time. And it's nice to see that he was not perfect, and the fact that, you know, he certainly didn't accomplish what he wanted to. If he did, he'd be off the show. Just like, you know, Riker gets his command and he's off the ship. So it's, you know, obviously it was not going to happen. Certainly not, you know, in 1980s television. But it was certainly good to see, you know, they tried to work some humor in. And, you know, I mean, obviously when, you know, Remick was interviewing, you know, the Enterprise crew members, it was interesting. There was a lot of sort of tension there with Starfleet personnel, which is a little bit different from that Roddenberry box. There was a lot more conflict here, at least with Remick coming in, than you usually see within Starfleet. So it was kind of refreshing, a little bit different. You know, one thing I did notice was, you know, he certainly talks to a few crew members, and, you know, we're talking about, you know, potential conspiracy security, and you think he may want to have a word with Tasha Yar there. maybe.
Think?
But then, yeah, we'll get Worf saying, you know, you don't like me, do you? Is that required? I mean, it's funny. It plays funny, but I think in terms of the story, you know, probably makes more sense to have that interview. So we all pretend it happened off screen,
mm-hmm.
but it would have been nice to see that happen. I mean, I don't know what the thinking, you know, other than, you know, making it humorous, whether this, you know, there was thing, you know, any thinking behind it, or, you know, Denise, was there anything cut there? I mean, was it film cut? I mean, it didn't seem like it. I mean, it seemed like that's what they intended.
I don't recall that, you know, it being cut, or, you know, I'm the only one that, you know, gets cut, or I don't think it went that way. I think they wanted, you know, they were always trying to figure this out still in this first season. What does Worf do? What does Tasha do? You know, we've got two of them in this kind of position. So it's like trying to give, you know, everybody a fair shake here. So, but I guess that, you know, this time was Worf's time to, you know, be featured. That's all I can think about with this stuff. It you know, we've seen together a lot of times. I'm in watching these again after all this time, going, where's the chief of security? You know, what, it's head scratching at times. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I think this is what I was going through while doing the show. I was scratching my head, going, what am I doing here? We're getting a kind of confirmation of it all, you know. Mm-hmm. Oh, maybe I wasn't crazy for leaving the show, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
What is that line from Ghostbusters? I don't think you're crazy. Oh, thank you. That makes me feel so much better, I think is what she replies to that. Good stuff. Thank you very much. Allison Leach Hyde is here wearing the Cisco Kid created by Siroc's sister. Great color there. What do you think of this episode?
I like the episode. I wish it would have been a two-parter because there was a lot going on. And it would have been nicer to have more, all the scenes fleshed out a little bit more, because they had a lot of good ideas that could have been given more time. And I think that would have been nice, because we had three fairly meaty plots, I guess, for what we're used to for this first season, and giving it more room to grow and breathe would have been nice. Some great lines. I loved Data. Acceptable, but or not, sir, it is the truth. That's like one of my favorites. Love that. There was a lot of yelling too, which was interesting. Lots of raised voices for, you know, well-trained military-esque officers. So that was interesting choices for me. But I love this stuff with Wesley, because he is a kid who gets to fail and have friends and be normal, which is great. Mm-hmm. So that's, you know, that's, I wanted more Tasha, of course, but I sound like a broken record. I say that pretty much every episode that you're in. So I would have taken more of actually all the ladies. We had a lot of set dressing with just a couple of lines. Like, Beverly didn't get to say goodbye or good luck to Wesley going down to take his test. She just gave him a hug. Pretty sure a mom would say some words, at least I would. So, you know, signs of the times, but I enjoyed the episode overall.
That would have been really interesting if we had, because there needs to be a reason for the scene, but the reason is kind of built in. What if she gives him some words of advice that play out later on in the episode, that's the reason he says, no, you know, more doc, let me help you out. You know, if she gives him some kind of piece of advice that leads into that, that would have been really cool. All right. Speaking of really cool, the Dark Lord, Chris McGee is here. What's up, Chris? What did you think of this episode?
I think it was a great episode. It was definitely kind of a landmark episode, especially because of Wesley's entrance to the Academy. I do have a couple of interesting observations about it, though. So apparently they only allowed one entrant this year. Is that each year?
Yeah, that's weird.
Seems like, because they said, hope to see you back next year, you'll do better next year and so forth. So they're going to have the same, you know, test to allow only one person in. So I'm a little bit curious about that. Apparently Starfleet Academy is much smaller than I thought it was. And of course, as Eve had mentioned, you know, when speaking of a threat to the Federation, what Eve and Siroc and anyone else who hasn't seen this series in its entirety, we need to remember this is a very much an episodic show. So you can't really trust that there's ever going to be any callbacks or follow-ups. So just bear that in mind. Finally, the little exchange near the end with Picard and Kurland, when Picard says, I hope you've learned that running away solves nothing. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think this is the last time that TNG becomes an after-school special. And then, of course, my phrase of the episode, Zoldans have webbed fingers.
Did anybody rewind and go back to see if we saw his hands? Because I wanted to, but I didn't end up doing it.
Yes, he did.
When
he
puts
his hand up to his chest between
you should see it.
Thumb and forefinger. Yep.
That's cool. All right. Cool. Carrie Schwent is hanging out in Chicago. She's got a really cool background. What's up, Carrie? What do you think about this episode?
I like this episode. I'd forgotten how early in the series it was. Of course, any episode that features my Wesley, I am 100% here for. He shows just some great maturity overall in the episode. I wanted the scene with Rondon in the hallway with the painted fake hallway behind them just a little bit longer, because that was just hysterical. I love, he has two really great scenes. The scene with Worf in the holodeck, they're kind of heart to heart. Worf's quote definitely speaks to me. Thinking about what you can't control only wastes energy and creates its own enemy. I've definitely fallen prey to that more than a few times. Yeah, the scene with the two of them was just fantastic. Him just talking as equals, really. And the scene at the end with him and Picard giving over the secret that he failed his first time to. I understand that very much myself. I failed my driver's test the first time, and it was probably a good 3 years before I finally got it. One of the only good things my exes ever did was drove me to the DMV, made me get my permit, made me drive everywhere, and then I finally got my license. But yeah, I will. Yeah, Remicus was super creepy. I did enjoy his little getting in the spirit of things with on the bridge with everybody, but then he went back to being creepy again. But I will end with my limerick for the episode. It is testing time for two of our crew. Picard learns his ship is up for review. Wesley faces his fears, but must retest next year. And the Admiral's offer Jean-Luc won't pursue.
Nice.
There we have it.
Wow, great stuff, Carrie. Thank you very much for calling in all the way from Chicago. Mai is live in Tokyo/New York. How are you, Mai? What did you think of this one?
I loved seeing Sam. It was fantastic. And nobody watched Quincy when you were kids?
Oh, Down Under?
Oh.
No, that's Quigley.
Quincy's assistant, Sam, was the guy that was the guy from Starfleet. So that was kind of cool. I found it curious how the crew got so annoyed at Remick so quickly, rather than just making fun of him. He'd be like, you know, tell me this. What did you do there? I don't know. What did I do? Or something. You know, it'd be really smart-assy with him. It would have been fun. But that, maybe that's just me. That would be all of us. I noticed that Picard, he's always described as somebody who hates kids. He did phenomenally well with kids this time. Maybe he's better with adult kids, but he killed it with Wesley and Jake. I thought that was really fantastic the way he handled that. A lot of subplots going on this episode felt very short. It just zipped right by, I thought. I like it a lot. It's a great episode. Murdoch getting into Starfleet and getting an assist, getting to Starfleet, that really makes me happy. One thing I found weird about this is they didn't do their science consulting with Dr. Mohamed Noor. They should have, because you don't want to turn off liquid hydrogen if you want to prevent an explosion. You want to suck the oxygen out of the room, because they already had sparks, some oxygen. They should have just sucked the oxygen out and there would have been no problem, but they're like, oh, we're going to have to, we can't shut it off. Who cares if you can shut it off? Just don't put oxygen in the room. But anyway, that was my thing. It was a great episode. Loved it.
Excellent knowledge. You got like 14 thumbs up from Muhammad there. So that's really good stuff. 16. All right. Steve Case is also here. What's up, Steve? Did you enjoy this episode? And what can you teach us about science today?
I did enjoy it, and I agree that instead of just a major plot and a subplot or two, it had definitely two major plots, and they could have done more with it. They almost could have each been their own plots, I thought. When the Admiral arrived, I noticed that the captain introduced him to Natasha Yar. I thought, did I hear that right?
Yeah.
And I don't remember her name ever pronounced like that before. Denise would remember that.
Yeah, that's her actual name. But no one ever calls her Natasha in the show. That may be the one and only time. I don't recall. I noticed that too, but like on my character description in the Bible and in the playing cards and whatever, it's Natasha Yar.
Okay. Well, I thought maybe being called a different name is why you disappeared mostly for the rest of the episode. Inquisition.
Right. I went to my quarters and just said in a huff.
Maybe that's just what he called you when he was
dare
mad at
he
you.
Call me Natasha.
Natasha Yar. Yeah. Oh, shit. I'm in trouble.
Exactly. The interrogations reminded me of like film I've seen of the McCarthy hearings and some of the questions. Bordered on, have you stopped beating your wife? It was just that kind of thing. Like there was no good answer to it. We heard about Jack twice, about how Picard's decisions had led to his death. Counselor Troy was interviewed, but her Betazoid powers never kicked in to realize what deception was going on. Yeah, so that was a curious omission. And I also realized that misappropriating a shuttle is a staple across all of the different Trek worlds. We saw it in this episode. We saw it, I think, in every different Trek, probably more than once. So that was kind of curious. An alternative title came to mind, actually, when I was finished watching it, especially after Wesley's part. I thought this one could have been called Nice Guys Finish Last, because if he had continued to be nice to the Zaldan crewmen, then he could have gotten beat up if he hadn't realized what he was and that he needed to be rude to him. And if he'd been more forward to Oleana, then who knows what could have happened there. And of course, if he hadn't helped Mordak, then he might have received that one Star Trek, that one Starfleet Academy slot, which, yeah, that struck me as odd too. Like there's only one opening every year, and these exact same people are going to come back every year and try again for that one slot. So that didn't make any sense to me at all. But I really did like the episode, and yeah, I'd give it an 8.
Ooh. High praise. Yeah. Well, you know what always makes sense is listening to Homer Freezy out somewhere in New Yeezy. What's up, Homer? Did you watch this episode? And if so, did you enjoy it?
Yes, on both counts. So it did strike me as odd that there was just the one slot as well. I got the impression that it wasn't overall, but it was just for that particular testing site. And I thought that at the beginning, the guy that stole the shuttle lost out to Wesley, so he couldn't go to this. And I thought they did a really good job of taking that part and then looping it in so that it's part of the A plot and the B plot. So they all sort of came together. So I thought they did a good job there. The interview scenes, I liked the cutting, the editing of them together. I thought that was well done. I mean, we've seen stuff like that before in court cases, but I thought it was done well. And then another thing that I noticed, of course, we have, you probably mentioned the Riker maneuver, but we also have this moment where Riker comes in to talk to Picard. Picard's in the window. It's like he's contemplating his future. And we see Riker's reflection there for a bit. And I thought that was just some really nice camera work. Mm. Okay, now on to the big question. From the mind that brought you the question about the turbo lift. I want to know, is there direction that's given at the end of a scene? Are you supposed to hold and have this dramatic pause like a soap opera? What directions are given?
Oh, no. When the scene is over, the director will yell cut. I mean, it's not like that soap opera thing. That is so weird, where you're holding. No, it's the script supervisor is there. They've got, they're going along with you. They know what the last line is, and the director will call it.
Because it seemed to me towards the beginning, Riker is holding it for a little bit for and then they cut to what would have been a commercial there.
Well, they might want to just hold a close up on him or something. but you'll see, start to watch it with that in mind. You'll start to watch the scenes, and they end pretty much when they, you know, when there's a commercial break, it's sometimes a little bit different, maybe.
Yeah.
Or they're doing something a little bit more sustained, but yeah, it's all TV except soap operas.
You know, they
yell cut, you know, at the end.
So it wasn't something, okay, Frakes, this time you're going to hold it for 3 seconds at the end, and then we'll edit. All right.
No, they just probably stayed on his face a little bit longer and then went cut. Yeah.
Cool. Okay. Yeah. So that's another thing I can put to bed, and I can sleep better. Thank you.
I'm so
glad. Well, you know, at the end of this free for all, we're all going to do that.
Mental health, Homer.
Yes. Very important.
Faith Howell is here, and we're so happy for it. She's on the bridge of the Enterprise D. What's up, Faith? What'd you think of this episode?
The best Enterprise, right? I like this one. I'm coming from the age where I really liked Wesley. I know, you know, he's not always everybody's favorite, but he was, you know, my big brother type hero. I think he's cool. So I really enjoyed the idea of this test. And I've often wondered, you know, how would I do on this test? And what would my big, you know, final exam test be? I wonder what you guys would pick if you had one. Maybe we could talk about that later. I mainly agree with Carrie. Remix a creeper. Wesley's awesome. I also wanted to answer Mai's comment about Picard and the children. And I wonder if he did better with Wesley in this case, because now they have a point of similar lived experience. And so it, you know, he had something to speak to, where, you know, a little toddler, you know, what do I do with it? It, you know, drools, it runs around, it touches things. There's no rules in its little life that make sense to me. So what do I do? And so I know a lot of adults, as a second grade teacher, I know a lot of adults are like that. They just don't know what to do with children. So I wonder, maybe since they had this common experience, then he was able to have a really prolific conversation.
Good point.
Great stuff. Well, it is time for, in honor of Jerry Springer, I think, that passed away recently, it's time for Sirach and Denise's final thoughts on the episode.
Oh, God. With Jerry Springer.
Isn't that what he would do? Like a final thought or something like that?
Well, or, you know, stay tuned for next week, where, you know, my Klingon baby is having an affair with my giraffe, you know, or something. Wow. Yeah, I liked this episode. I really, again, you see when Wesley is with his peers, just how he can really blossom. And it's just a whole different level of this character comes into play. I really liked the guy who played their leader, their supervisor through all the testing. I thought he did a really nice job. And
Hack there was Officer Chang.
Yeah, Officer Chang. I thought he was terrific. The other thing is, there's an interesting thing when they gave the position to Mordok, you know, that he was the candidate chosen. There was something where Officer Chang said, or Mordok tried to resist, you know, tried to say, you know, really it should be Wesley. And Officer Chang said something really subtle, that it wasn't just that there were other things. Why he came in second. And it left me like going, what is that about? Like, where did he not? I mean, every test along the way, he aced, you know, and
he dropped the ball with Oleana. That was the test he didn't know.
There you go.
Well, yeah, you know, he's a professional, you know, he's there for, you know, You know why he's there. He's going to wait. But yeah, I just kind of wondered what because it wasn't explained. I wanted to know what that was. But yeah, I thought I loved the makeup. I loved Mordok's makeup. It was just one of my favorites that I've seen so far. And he just, really again brought the character out under all that latex. He didn't try to, sometimes actors try to act through the mask, that they feel like they have to push big and do big gestures because you can't read through the mask, mm-hmm. but he doesn't do that at all. And it was really, really well done. And I loved seeing Patrick in his dress uniform. I always just think that looks so good. I love that. I love that outfit.
Yeah.
That's my take.
Yeah. I was waiting for Mordok to play that harmonica the whole time, and he just wouldn't play it.
What a tease.
Some Dylan. Some Bob Dylan.
Bob Dylan. Yeah, that would have been great. Would have been a great moment.
That would have been.
Of course, I love this episode because, Jake's in it. It's a Jake. That's what I was screaming when I heard that.
It's a Jake.
And I finally got, I might have to clip Picard saying, stay calm, Jake, because I kind of like that. Might put that in my voicemail. So basically, I sum up this episode as an admiral wants to make the captain an admiral to be the commandant of a school with four kids. And that's really basically what it boiled down to that. That's the part of it that it was really confusing, it was underwhelming that it was only those four kids. And essentially, I guess they wanted Picard to be the Officer Chang. I just didn't get what exactly they were asking him to be and why they wanted him to give up command of all of this to run a school. It just felt really kind of out of place in that way. But I do like some of the performances. I really like the Worf Wesley scenes. I like the moments of them together. I thought this Commander Remick was good at getting under people's skin and really felt like an Inspector General type of character. How everybody was pissed that he was there, but he had the right to be there. So it's kind of like one of those things. Overall it was a good episode. It took me a little bit. Took me about 10 minutes to get warmed up, but after that, I started to get into it and started to enjoy it.
We got to get Sirach to write the IMDb synopses to these episodes, or like have a segment where he gives us one of those gold nuggets every episode.
One thing I was going to say. My feeling about the Academy, This feels, Relva or wherever they, land for this, it feels like a testing site. Like I feel like the Academy is somewhere else filled with lots of people. Mm-hmm. So that's the place I think that Patrick would, Picard would go and run, on some that the Federation or the Academy is somewhere, somewhere else.
I got the Academy's in San Francisco. It's not just,
right.
Yeah.
San Francisco.
Yeah, that's where it is. And this was Relva 7, but I didn't really catch the details of all that, so I really couldn't speak on it. But all right. Well, thanks, everybody. Thanks, Eve, Chris, Muhammad, Jason, Allison, Carrie, Mai, Steve, Homer, and Faith. This has been a lot of fun. Everybody at home. For myself, for Denise, Sirach, Melissa, and Aaron, thank you all so much for joining us. And until next time, we're going to do our soap opera hang on, stare at the camera. Always remember the seventh rule.